This is the IBJ Podcast for the week of April the 1st, 2024, brought to you by Taft. I'm your host, Mason King. Welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Chick McGee has been a fixture on Indianapolis radio for 38 years as a cast member of the Bob and Tom Show, the morning show which originates from WFBQ-FM and is heard on close to 100 radio stations across the country. That's 38 consecutive years, even if you count the 6 months in 1995 when he moved to San Diego to host another show and then resigned due to creative differences, homesickness, and the earlier resignation of his co-host. He was quickly invited back to Bob and Tom, where his chemistry with the core cast continued to grow. Anybody who has listened to the show for more than a few weeks knows his central role. He is the combustible comic foil for host Tom Griswold, who likes to claim the intellectual high ground while Chick wears his heart on his sleeve, including his 7 or 8 stents from cardiac disease. I'm not going to go into great detail here since he is such a well-known figure, especially locally. I do want to assure you that I scheduled this interview before realizing it would be released on April Fool's Day. This is for real. There is no joke or surprise here. I also want to make a rare distinction for this episode of the IBJ Podcast. I am an unabashed admirer of Chick McGee. He is something of a hero of mine, and it wouldn't be honest to pretend otherwise. So, full disclosure, this interview comes from the perspective of both a journalist and a fan. On this episode of the IBJ Podcast, McGee dives into the dynamics that drive the show and how his role developed and evolved over 38 years. You might know that co-host Bob Kevoian retired in 2015 and has since suffered serious health issues. Griswold had heart valve replacement surgery in 2021, and comedian Ron Sexton, best known as recurring character Donnie Baker, died last fall. Mortality isn't necessarily funny, but it's fodder for McGee, who believes it's important to be real on air about difficult topics. McGee also runs through his origin story, growing up in an idyllic Ohio town, the rocky family life that shaped him, and the mentor who encouraged him to embrace being funny. Here's our conversation. It's my pleasure to welcome to the podcast Chick McGee. If you're looking for a specific title, are you considered co-host of the show?
I guess. Technically, my business cards say sports director, but I certainly don't do sports. Tom is the host. I have an affection for goofball. I like that title, but it's a little tough to get into different venues and things if that says that on your business card.
Actually, so. Your placard over there, the nameplate says broadcast legend.
Legend, yes. Well, legend is... You stay around long enough, you become a legend. Yeah, so there you go. So maybe, maybe, let's go with legend. No, I'm just, I'm on the Bob and Tom Show. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say you are an integral part of one of the most successful radio shows in the history of broadcasting. I'm sure on a day-to-day basis, it doesn't feel like that.
It doesn't on a day-to-day basis, which I'm glad about because the weight of that doesn't exactly suit me, or I don't think any of us. We've been very lucky. We've been, all of us have been more or less, of course, obviously, with the exception of Bob, we've all been together since the mid-80s.
Do you do, or are you expected to do, anything to prepare for the show?
I don't like to prepare all that much because I hope this doesn't sound weird, but as I'm doing the show, I'm always reminded of the Muppets. They said they're the only performers in show business who, as they're doing the show, they're watching themselves. So they're enjoying their performance and they're actually doing their performance. And I think that's what I like to do. I like to, if I'm too prepared, I'm not in the moment and enjoying the organic nature of the show. So I don't like to know too much, and I don't like to be, other than the nuts and the bolts of, you know, who won the basketball tournament or whatever, that's okay. But it was just a way for me to get on the show to do sports. So I don't like to be all that prepared. As a matter of fact, back in 95, I don't know if you remember this or not, I went to San Diego to do a morning show.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. Yeah.
Got away from this show. And they told me two things when I got there. they said, hey, we love what you've been doing on the Bob and Tom Show. And I go, oh, thank you. And then the same guy said, stop doing that. So that did not
that
last.
That didn't come out during the interview?
Didn't last. Yeah, I don't know. They sure enjoyed hiring me, but they didn't enjoy me working there, which was very, very odd. So we had meetings. It was just, it wasn't my scene, man. So, yeah. But Tom and his infinite wisdom kept an eye on me and kept me on the show. And the West Coast correspondent, yada, yada, just a way to have my voice still on the show. And I came back 6 months later, and here we are.
That's incredible.
And I really didn't leave. So, yeah, it was all right.
So I'm going to risk sounding like I've written my graduate thesis.
All right.
About the show.
Okay.
But there's a couple ideas that I just want to float out there.
All right.
So, and we talked a little bit about this before we went on. There's a fascinating dynamic in the show. And certainly in the most recent era, kind of the post-Bob era,
mm-hmm.
where Tom has become like the classic father figure of the show. He's gotten more stuffy, a little more pretentious, a little more officious, like in the way that, you know, when you get older, you become like a parody of yourself.
Right.
And it's your job. It seems to be your job to continually bust him. And maybe Josh and Christy's job to kind of like be in the middle and make fun of you both, right. but really make more fun of Tom.
Right.
So how did that dynamic come about?
Tom and I had the conversation. It would be boring if we agreed with each other. But then there are some things that he does that really do irritate the hell out of me. So, I mean, and it's really a testament to him that he does what he able to do and under that framework, if you want to even call it a framework. And I just try to, we've had several meetings about, because I feel like I'm going at him too hard today. I can't do this. This sounds like I'm really angry or mean, or I don't want to be that way, because there are people who love Tom. I mean, I know. Yeah. See, that's the thing about it. And, but we've always said we do the show for ourselves. And if we're laughing, we don't know if anyone else is laughing, but we're having a good time. So we hope you're having a good time too. So
when did you guys have that conversation when, as you mentioned before we went on there, that that you were getting kind of close to just being kind of like a yes man to Tom? And he said, you know, this is not working.
Yeah. That was, I will never forget. First couple of weeks, we sat down. It was me and Bob and Tom. And I just started doing sports. And Tom says, look, here's the thing. When Christy comes in and does the news, it'd probably be best if you didn't comment on the news stories. You just stay kind of in the background, just hang in the background. Or better yet, if you're not doing sports, maybe just stay out of the studio until. And I'm like, yeah, that's a good idea. That's really a good idea. Yeah. And but then shortly thereafter, it all started, if I'm brutally, well, not brutally honest, but honest. He wanted to set the relationship up that he has with me. He wanted to do that with Bob for the longest time, and those two be more adversarial than they ever were on the air. Well, that didn't happen, or it didn't fit right, or Tom didn't want to upset Bob, or Bob didn't want to upset Tom, or something. And it was all just very, as these things happen, it was all very fortunate and luck and timing. And I was in the building, and I'd gotten fired by the AM, and come on in. And then it wasn't much longer than that when I don't know if I said to Tom for the first time on the air, what the hell are you talking about, or something like that. But we knew we had something and we needed to explore that relationship and bring it on the air. And people seemed to enjoy it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Tom, obviously, right, super smart guy.
Oh, yeah.
And it sounds like my suspicion is correct. I mean, he understands the roles.
Oh, yeah.
And it still seems very generous of him as a performer to pretty much let everybody gang up on him.
Oh, yeah.
At least a couple of times a day.
Well, no, his thing is he's above it all, and he doesn't really even hear any sort of criticism. He's just, you know, what did he tell me today? Well, you're far too ignorant to understand my point, or something like that. It's the general, you get the general flavor of our disagreements. Yeah. So, which is, you know, hilarious.
And one of the things that I have loved most about what you do on the show, just besides being like really quick and clever and be able to spin things very fast, is how well you use anger to cut through the noise of the show. Yeah. And in a lot of times, I mean, your persona is like emotionally raw.
Oh, yeah. Well, my emotional IQ is not that high. I've always said, I don't want to talk a lot about this, but my childhood, as far as my mom was 17, my dad was 18 when I arrived, and a lot went on, and not all positive, but one of the things that really stuck with me after therapy and is like my mom did not want to see me cry, did not want to see me upset, and wouldn't let me be upset or cry, or so that, you know, that's that stunts that development for, you know, I don't know, 50 years or so. Yeah. But I have a thing that I say that I really have to tell. It's my way of telling Christy, especially because she gets upset that I'm really upset. But I will scream or raise my voice, something to the effect of, my fake anger about this is off the charts or something like that. So she knows that I know I'm not. It's okay, you know, but it all feels right. And we all know it's like, okay, this is going okay. But then there's some mornings where let's switch gears. Let's do something else. And yeah, luckily we can do that.
Again, just to back into my graduate thesis. Right. So there definitely are schools of comedy that will say, you know, every good joke has a little bit of anger in it.
Oh, sure.
Every good joke has like a little bit of truth telling in it.
Oh, yeah.
And that feels like what's happening sometimes on the show.
Oh, I mean, absolutely.
That's the stuff that works the best.
Absolutely. Everybody hates Christmas a little bit, you know? I mean, that's, it's true. Or whatever holiday you celebrate, everybody hates it a little bit. Everybody, you know, they love their family, but boy, they're mad at them. You know, I mean, I've always thought that, I remember plainly when the Beatles broke up, and I just couldn't understand how those four guys and the creative and their body of work and the songs and how could they break up? Didn't they know how much, you know, money they were? How is that going to fulfill any of the? But then you get into a situation where you're in a working environment like that and creative, and you start to understand it a little bit, you know. And people who say, well, you've worked with such and such for 20. Do you ever argue? Do you ever honestly fight? Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're human beings. Of course, we disagree. But it's classic as far as everybody has that one friend who you've been friends forever, and then you have that argument, and you're even better friends after that argument. And that's exactly where Tom and I have been since I went to San Diego, actually. Well, and I came back and we were much better, got along much better after I got back. So, yeah.
How are you different on air today than you were in the first decade of the Bob and Tom Show?
I'm not quite as nervous, I guess, or calmer and mature. And I think I understand the whole process a little better. And I still don't like any... I don't like being involved in any grown-up decisions. I don't care about that. I don't want to, you know, a budget meeting. I'd rather not. Thanks a lot. Have Tom do that, which I'm very fortunate that he does. And he doesn't want me there. He'll tell me that because he knows, well, if he's at the budget meeting, he's going to be crabby next morning and we can't let anything get in the way of the show, which is, you know, kind of our breads and butters. But yeah, I'm more confident, I guess. I hate comfortable in my own skin, but I am, I guess. And I've done an awful lot of, I heard, what podcast was he on? And I forget who the host was. Daggone it. But they were interviewing Henry Winkler and, you know, the Fonz. And they just asked him in general how he was doing and things. He goes, you know, when I did the Fonz and on my celebrity and the success of that show, and I didn't want to confront or be asked about anything about the Fonz. I didn't want to hear about it. I didn't want to talk about it. I just wanted to move on to the next thing and don't insult me about this or whatever. And his point was, well, that's ridiculous. He was the Fonz and it's amazing and it's an icon. And so he was saying, hang with me now. He said, I'm kind of like a muffin. Like a muffin you put in the oven. He goes, it took me a very long time to be done and my muffin to be finished and complete. And that's the way I think about myself. I was not a nice person for a very long time. And that's, you know, but we brought that onto the air and, you know, I don't want to talk to anybody, which was kind of true. And, but it's not true anymore, but people still, I mean, they'll, you know, they'll cuss me out and go, how you doing? You know, and we'll laugh. And that's the place in their life that I'm a placeholder, I guess. I don't know. But, you know, it's life. It's it really took me a long time to be done. and I'm okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Great.
So Bob retired in 2015?
December 2015. Yes, right. Sir. Yeah.
How has the show changed? I mean, there have been obviously cast additions, and I'm at the point where I forget everybody's last name, but Josh Arnold. Josh Arnold, who's
just
wonderful.
Like Benedict Arnold. Oh, well, you have your own opinion, of course. Yeah.
if we want to like keep going with this family like analogy, it's like Tom's the dad, you guys are the two brothers.
Yeah.
The two smart ass brothers.
Mm-hmm. Christy's the sister. Christy, yeah.
Yeah, kind of the sister.
Stop it, guys.
Yeah. Ace is the cool uncle.
Right.
I don't know what Pat is exactly. Maybe the neighbor who always comes over for dinner.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, wonderful guy. Just in terms of that anime, how was your experience of the show been since Bob left?
It wasn't a surprise that he was retiring. And up until part of 15, and I want to say back to the middle part of 14, Bob was turning it down a little bit. Like he'd, you know, 3 days out of five, he'd be at work this, that, and the other. And Tom and I had several meetings, and meetings is a very loose term, but we talked about, you know, here's what's going to happen. Bob's not going to be here. Just basically it went from what the hell are we going to do to the more often we do it, the better we'll get at it. And sure enough, we all kind of knew that to continue it, we were going to have to turn it up and try not to lose anything. Bob took up a big part of the show. I mean, yeah. But we didn't have a choice. If we wanted the show to continue, we had needed to, for me to do a little bit of Bob, what Bob was doing, for Tom to step in and pick up some things. It wasn't that easy, but it started to seem more and more normal after, I don't know how long it was, but it was, to the point where Bob has been back a couple of times, and it's kind of like riding up a roller coaster, and the thing kind of, you're like, okay, this is, so we got to have to get used to that again. Yeah. Well, when Tom missed, I think 6 weeks or whatever it was, not that long ago, we got into No Tom, and we got into that rhythm, and that was interesting. We did it, and sure enough, we went along fine. And then when he came back, it was a little, okay, all right. So we figured it out and kind of went ahead with it and hoped we were doing all right.
Right. So you're 66, I'm 56, but I'm already sort of entering that period where mortality just starts coming at you.
Oh my God. Yeah.
From like all angles. And right. So Bob announced about a year ago, he had stomach cancer and just last month announced that he's now cancer free. Thank God.
Right.
Tom, about 2.5 years ago, had a really serious heart surgery.
He has something from a cow inside his body. It's disgusting. Part of his heart is now, and now he can't have dairy. No, that's a joke. And I don't know if you know, I had a double bypass when I was 39 years old.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah. I never know. And the lady who knows how many stents I have is gone this week. I have 7 or 8 stents keeping my arteries open. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. My grandfather died when he was 45, and my dad died when he was 43. And, my grandfather liked alcohol, and my father had the same thing I have, which is arterial sclerosis or whatever you want to call it. He had blockages in his arteries, but he didn't know back in 81. So it just one night he just hit the lights, and that was it.
Okay. So this is an old friend for you. I mean, thinking about, you know, what happened.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Weekend. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know if, you know, Tom's trouble and Bob's trouble, if that made you sort of reconsider what you're doing with your life or made you wonder, well, is the show going to keep going?
I've had the meeting with myself, talked to the guy in the mirror. Yeah, he's a hell of a guy every now and then. A little unreasonable sometimes, but he's all right. As life is sometimes, I was miserable and just worried all the time and not very good at being a participant in life when I moved to San Diego. And sitting here now and looking back at that, I'm glad that happened when it did. Because I'm whatever this, however long we do the show, I'll be here and we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm fine. I'm as happy as I get to doing the show. And who told me this? I saw this on, you know, you see everything online. Yeah, my mom and dad weren't very were very good parents, but at least I'm funny or something like because oh, of that. Yeah. Or yeah, so I'm even you know, I'm to the point where I've forgiven them in my brain and everything's fine and yeah, so I couldn't ask for anything more. That my dream was always to sit in a room and be on the radio and play music and enjoy music and just be a disc jockey. Obviously, I've screwed up in reverse, and I didn't know this was happening, but apparently it has, and it's still happening every day. I guess we're going to do another show tomorrow morning, I guess. I don't know. Somewhere in Cincinnati is what I hear.
Is that the opening day show?
Yeah.
For the Reds?
Yeah.
Okay, that should be fun. So, okay, so you're going to be in Ohio, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The Chip McGee story starts in 1957 in London, Ohio.
That's right.
And your birth name is not Chick McGee, and I'm not even sure how to pronounce it. What was your birth name?
Charles Hayes?
Hayes, is it F-O-U-T?
Oh, yes. That was my mother and father's. That's where I got sideways with my mom and dad, and I didn't want anything to do with them, this, that, and the other. And I took the name of my children at the time. I took my wife at the time's last name.
Oh.
Is what happened.
Okay. But you were born just Hayes.
No, I was born as Fout.
Oh, Fout. Okay.
F-O-U-T.
Oh, gotcha.
Just like Dan Fouts, but no S.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So how did Chick McGee come about?
Oh, this is sounds like a goofy story, but it's absolutely the truth. Do you remember The Incredible Hulk?
Absolutely. Don't make me angry.
Well, yeah. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. The reporter chasing him in Bill Bixby in the TV show was named Jack McGee, and I liked them. The McGee sounded pretty good. And when I first started, I was Chuck Michaels, actually, because my favorite disc jockey in Columbus, Ohio was Jay Michaels. And I really liked Michaels, isn't it? So I was Chuck Michaels for a little bit at my first radio station. And then I went to McGee, and then I got here, and I was Chuck McGee here for a little bit. But then one day, as these things happen, Tom was on the phone with one of his friends named Chick, and he got off the phone, and I said, man, that's really cool. You have a friend named Duke and a friend named Chick. You're really cool. And he goes, oh, you know, Chuck's close enough to Chick. Let's call you Chick. And what do they say in the Ten Commandments? So it is written, so it shall be done. And here I am as Chick McGee 30 years later. Damn. So that's how it happened. Yeah.
Okay. On a day-to-day basis, are you go by Chick outside the studio?
It depends on who I'm. Friends from high school still call me Chuck. The mother of the kids calls me Chuck or Idiot or Mr. Idiot. No, we get along great, actually, the second wife. I'm Chick. If I had a choice, I'd want to be called Chick. But those who call me Chuck, I don't mind it that much.
So when you look up, do a Google search for London, Ohio.
Yes.
You get two images right off the bat.
Ask me anything. I know everything about London, Ohio, the Madison County seat. Go ahead.
You get like a cornfield.
Yes.
And you get a picture of a John Deere tractor.
Those
are the two images that are set up for you by Google.
Yeah.
So tell me about London, Ohio.
That's London. London, Ohio. It's a great place to be from, said the man. Yeah, it was pretty much like a Christmas story. It was my school looked like a Christmas story school. I got a BB gun when I was a kid. Yeah, it was the early 60s, middle 60s. It was a great place to grow up other than the war zone that was my house. But other than that, I mean, you could go out all day and play plastic bat and ball and basketball and come home later that night. But I wouldn't trade it for anything. I mean, like I said, it did kind of you know, it took me a long time to realize they didn't really do anything to me. I just was, this is life, and what's happening now is going to help later. And, yeah. You know, everybody hates high school. Everybody, you know, everybody worth a damn hates high school, you know. And my best friend in forever, I met him in kindergarten. He owns a sporting goods store in London still today. And I would work in the summertime for him at sidewalk sales. I'd go down and run the register and stuff like that. And played football in high school, and we were a pretty good team. And yeah, it's a cross between Friday Night Lights and Christmas Story. I mean, it's wow. It's just American out the ass, man. So, I don't know if I can say that on IBJ, but yeah. So
oh, yeah, you can.
It's really, really normal.
Okay, let's take a quick break so we can hear from our sponsor. This is the IBJ Podcast.
Taft, today's modern law firm, with more than 800 attorneys in 8 primary Midwest markets and the District of Columbia, we provide solutions to the business issues facing middle market and emerging companies alike. We do this through a highly collaborative and inclusive team approach. Taft, the modern law firm. To learn more, visit taftlaw.com.
All right, we're back with this week's edition of the IBJ Podcast and my conversation with Chick McGee of The Bob and Tom Show.
What was the first inkling that you were going to end up on radio?
Something happened. I plainly remember taking a radio just like that, which is somebody sent me that. I was talking about it on the air one.
Oh, morning. A transistor?
A transistor radio, and there's a speaker inside there. And I had two of them, and I took the speakers out and wired them together and put them over my ears like they were headphones. And I would listen to music that way, and that started my love of music. I just, if I'm obsessive or compulsive or anything, it's... Well, there are three things, leather bags, jackets, and there's music out there that I haven't heard yet. Mm-hmm. And that really bothers me. So I look for music, and I enjoy the music. And then I don't know. I've tried to look for this show online, and I really haven't been very successful. Bill Russell, the Boston Celtic, used to have a talk show. It was Bill Russell from Washington or something like that. And it was kind of a baby way back when there wasn't anything syndicated. But I think Mike Douglas was syndicated on the Westinghouse Network. And I think Bill Russell was syndicated on that. Anyway, Bill Russell had Rob Reiner on one of his shows. And they were talking. And Rob Reiner did a comedy bit about a disc jockey. And he started talking like that. And I went... Well, now that's interesting. And something happened. And, well, this is embarrassing. But I would, like I said, I'm an only child. And I'm not lonely. I'm just only. And I would drive around reading signs on restaurants as that guy. And I knew that really held, not mystery, but it really held something like I wanted to do that. Mm-hmm. I knew that's what I was going to do. And it was just a matter of time when my speech teacher in high school, an amazing woman, I love her to death to this day, Mrs. Joyce Hildebrand. She's just amazing. And she, I don't want to make this sound heavier than it is, but it's absolutely the truth. She was one of the first adults who listened to me and acted like she was, enjoyed conversations and wanted to know what I thought about things and just everything that a nurturing relationship should be. I don't know where I'd be if it hadn't been for her. And I won the speech award my senior year. And most of the time, the recipient would get a small scholarship. It wasn't any big thing. But she got me like 10 joke books and the Milton Berle compilation of every joke he'd ever told and Neil Simon's book of plays. And she really knew me and paid attention, was very kind. And I haven't talked to her in a while. and I need to do that.
Yeah.
But that's how it happened. And the next thing I know, I'm working on I'm on the actual radio. Well, I went to broadcasting school for 4 months. That every morning I went, I thought it was going to be a beauty parlor. And next morning, I thought, well, this can't continue. this isn't a business. But yeah, it taught me how to make an air check. And
yeah,
that's the problem with radio right now, said the old guy. There's no place for people to be bad on the air, and there's no place to, you know, get better. Or, you know, there's one guy doing 12 different radio stations from a room in Chicago, which is, I get it. It's cost effective. It's fine. But
I mean, you got into podcasting 2012, mm-hmm. and obviously we know there are 3 billion podcasts. I mean, is that a place where people can be bad if, you know, they just want to get into it?
Well, there's a difference between really being bad and being bad, but still with a certain amount of professional in the back of your brain that I have to read this commercial, or I have to do this, or this is a corporation that I'm working for, and I'm doing afternoons from noon to six, and, you know, I can't, you know, this, that, and the other. It's funny, that podcast, I thought we were getting in. I would really like to try and start it again, but I know that the reason it really does become, it's just a grind, and it feeds my soul more than it feeds my bank account, obviously, at this point. And the big show, actually, I should probably pay more attention to that than I do or would do a podcast. But
so the show that you started in 2012 was with mm-hmm. Jess Hooker,
mm-hmm.
who you were a couple with
uh-huh.
at the time.
Right.
And what was the idea there? It was just like, this can be an outlet for me beyond something that I would normally do at the Bob and Tom show.
It was, especially in 2012, I don't know if my true personality was ever on. I thought I was too much of a goofball, and, you know, I wanted my actual real personality, not so much a cartoon of myself, is why I started doing podcasts. I wanted to interview people. I wanted to talk to people. I wanted to be a little bit more real. And it's like when Clooney does Ocean's 11 for the box office, but then he'll do The American because that, you know, it feeds his soul. So that was the thinking behind the podcast.
Was that weekly?
We did one every week. Yeah. Like I said, I thought we were late to the, when we started in 12, I thought we were late. I thought, oh, there's nobody, you know, and now I had no idea. Now people really know what a podcast is, and, you know, everybody downloads, I would say, one or two every week, everybody. But I don't know. Maybe we'll start doing it again. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, so, and you're with, I mean, woman you're riding with at the time. So the relationship is on display. And so what your relationship with her is like is kind of like who you are.
Right.
And then I take it, because I read it on the internet, is a few years later, you guys broke up and you had an actual episode about it.
Oh,
it was
like
couples therapy on the podcast.
And Mark Maron was kind enough to, it's 30-something, whatever episode that is. But Mark and I have been friends for 20 years, even before. I mean, he used to come through and do comedy. And he's really got a hold on therapy, and, you know, he's recovering, and, you know, this, that, and the other. And he had a very painful experience with his girlfriend. But that was part of it. That was something I wanted to do. That was something that was real and going on, and here it is. And it's something that you hear not on a lot of podcasts, but most of the good podcasts are honest like that. And that there was something attractive about that. And it really felt good to still be, you know, funny and humorous a little bit, but also, you know, I'm more than an idiot and a whoopee cushion. I'm an actual person. I don't know. It's just like, you know, all musicians want to be stand-up comedians, and all stand-up comedians want to be guitar players. And somebody told me that one time that that's the problem with all human beings, is that curly-haired girls want to have straight hair and straight-haired girls want to have curly hair. It's nobody's happy with what they're doing.
Was there like a revenue component? I mean, were you making good money off of the podcast?
Well,
did that not matter?
No. It really didn't matter at the time, but it was amazing how little money we were making. We had, we had two or three sponsors, but yeah. I mean, you really have to get in with a company, and they don't just. The commercial's not for the Chick McGee show. It's for, six or seven other podcasts, and everybody gets the same copy, and you get the code that they can trace back to. If you get the code that says .com/Chick, and then they know that it came from our podcast and this, that, and the other. And then the rating and reviewing that Apple does, it was all political in a different way. And like I said, it also eased me a little bit more into the adult world. And there were things that I was having to do that Tom takes care of on the show that I did not care for. So, yeah. But there was a reason I started it. And there's a reason I look back on it fondly. And there's a reason that I would probably absolutely do it again.
Over time, did it morph into this something, where you had several regulars on the show?
Yeah.
Few guys, each of a different decade, and it was, I don't know exactly what you're trying to do there, but it was a generational
no
take,
no no right? Yeah, it was me, it was Jess, it was Caitlin, it was Jeff Vibbert, who works for Barstool now. We tried to, how would this affect, a 60-year-old and a 20-year-old and a 30-year-old and a 40-year-old, and yeah, that's a good way to put it. I don't know what I was trying to do. but we were just having a good time, I think, and we just, I hear a lot of podcasts trying to do the same thing now that we were doing. So not that they got it from us, but it's just a natural progression of, podcasts.
So what is it that you still most enjoy doing about the Bob and Tom Show?
Genuinely laughing and thinking something's funny. And as you might guess, after 66 years, I do have a different sense of humor. It's not impossible, but something... When something hits me and I genuinely think it's funny, it's not rare. I don't want to make it sound like that, but it's, I think we still do that every morning. And I'm proud of that, it's still interesting to me. I still get up and want to come to work and look forward to it. And still I write when I don't know I'm writing, like I'll see something and I'll put it in my phone and then I'll bring it up the next day. And it's all very much... I mean, even right from the start, it was really, boy, this sounds so like something I'd turn off. But it's really just like, I don't know how long it's been just a part of me. And it's just how I run my life now. But it's been a long time since, I'll talk about that tomorrow morning, or we'll do that. Or yeah, it's been quite a while.
So I got the impression from something you said a few minutes ago, but you intend to keep doing this as long as there's a show.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I'm not going to, barring, the Powerball or the Mega Millions, but I don't think I'd quit then. I'm kind of a gentleman retired right now. There's very few things that I do in connection with the show, including doing the show, that I dread, or I go, oh God, I can't do that, or whatever it might be. I can't think of the last time, well, especially since the comedy tour stopped, I can't think of the last time I dreaded. And that, I didn't mind the comedy tour, and I didn't mind hosting the shows, and I didn't mind the comedians, and I made friends for life, and that was lucrative, and people were very kind all over the country. But boy, the traveling. Mm-hmm. Is just there's nothing quite like getting up at 4, getting off the air at 10, catching a plane for San Jose Friday afternoon, getting to San Jose, doing two shows Friday night, two shows Saturday night in San Jose, and then getting up at 4:00 Pacific time. And when you wake up and realize you got to get to the airport, you're actually physically ill, and then coming back and doing the show Monday morning.
That sounds horrible.
That was a grind. But I understand that might be coming back, though. So we'll see. I don't think it's going to be quite that much of a grind, but we'll see. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
if Bob and Tom hadn't come along, or just circumstances have been a little bit different, and you didn't end up doing the show, and you ever wonder, what would have you ended up doing?
Boy, I've got to think I would have been on the air in some form or fashion somewhere, I would think. Yeah, the joke is I don't have any skills. I don't know what else I do other than this. It's such a cop out, but maybe write comedy or something, I guess. I don't know. That's a tough one. I think I'd probably write comedy or maybe do something behind the scenes with the movies or something. I don't know. I don't have a college degree. I mean, Ohio State still has $35,000 of my money, but optimism is high that they're going to get that back to me. So,
you think so? Maybe they'll give you an honorary degree.
Yeah, I'd take that. That'd be fine. That would be fine. Okay. I'd show up even. Yes.
I was going to ask you here at the end this horrible question about regrets.
Oh good.
But it sounds like you have too many to talk about.
I do have too many regrets. Yeah. I to line them up. Oh gosh, yeah. Timing and you're married three times, you got regrets. You're married two times, you got regrets. So I wish I had been this intelligent, or however you want to put it, or aware, or comfortable, or well-adjusted, I guess, or okay with myself being alone, or however you want to put it, earlier on in life. Yeah. I think that would have really come in handy. Yeah.
We got to end on a higher note than that.
Okay, good.
Of the folks who regularly pass through Indianapolis and come to the show, one or two folks who you just really love having in the studio.
Chad Daniels is amazing. He's always fun. He's always positive, and he's always got, it seems like he always has new material. Let's see, Jimmy Pardo Jimmy could read the phone book, and I think it was funny. Doug Stanhope, I've known Doug for 25 years before he became crazy popular. I hosted a show at Notre Dame when Doug looked at me side stage and said, I'm going to do my abortion hunk tonight just to see how many people I can walk. And I said, Doug, please don't do that. And by God, he did. And people walked since the show.
Wow.
And then there was a time Doug and I were in Appleton, Wisconsin. And we were doing this. A comedy club, and we're backstage, and I'm getting ready to go introduce him. And he goes, you ever do mushrooms? And I go, no, Dougie, haven't done mushrooms. And he goes, well, we're going to do mushrooms when you come off stage. I go, okay, all right, I'm down, Doug. So do the show, get up, you know, and we're backstage again. And he goes, okay. He goes, wait a minute, are you from here? And I go, no, I'm from Indianapolis, Doug. Oh, I can't let you do mushrooms if you're going to get on a plane. I can't let you do that. So it was kind of sweet in a way.
Yeah.
So Tim Wilson, I miss Tim Wilson. He was always a great guest. Tim and I spent a lot of time in the car, you know, and Ron Sexton and the Donnie Baker thing. I know they're just not here anymore, which is just, it's human nature to look at it and try to make sense of it. And, you know, it's real life, man. I mean, it's it's fun, and it's yin yang. It's something else. It's not for pussies, I'll tell you that. True love in real life is not for the faint of heart. That doesn't sound right. Yeah. Wussies. Let's go with wussies. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I have to say, you make my mornings a lot better than NPR.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. I often say I wish there was a show I could listen to when I'm coming into this show that I could go to them and go, hey, you really make my mornings. And so far, I haven't found anybody. A couple of podcasts, but not really.
All right. Well, I hope you stay with the show for as long as you want, and hopefully that's a long time. And thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. I appreciate it. This has gone. It was gone much better than I thought. Great.
I was going to ask you a lot of merger and acquisition questions.
Oh, no.
Probably God. Not going to happen.
I can't answer those anyway. You know that.
That's good. Get any stock tips?
My thanks again to Chick McGee. And folks, before you get on with the rest of your week, there are a few stories in the latest edition of IBJ I want to draw to your attention. First up, Hendrix Commercial Properties is close to finalizing the deals that will lead to its planned $600 million redevelopment of Circle Center Mall downtown. Mickey Shuey explains how its track record with other major projects in the city, including Ironworks and Bottle Works, helped persuade city officials that Hendrix was right for the job. Also in this week's issue, Dave Lindquist has the story of Fred Kaufman, a veteran of the early days of fast food franchising, who has come out of retirement to lead two Rally's restaurants. And Susan Orr explains how a 26-year employee of Chase Bank in Indianapolis was such an influence on the co-founder of a New York City startup that he named it after her. Again, you can find these stories in the latest print edition of IBJ or, of course, online at IBJ.com. And thanks again for making time this week for the IBJ podcast. I'm Mason King. Hang in there, everybody. We'll be back again next week.